Kathanupaniṅgha Sutra.
This is a talk about Mumin Khan, case 28. Ryu Tan's name echoed long. Generally during session, Dharma talks are about different koans from the Mumin Khan, which is the first book of koans that you get, a first full book. One day, Tokusan kept asking Ryu Tan for instruction till nightfall. Ryotun finally said, "The night is late. Why don't you go to bed?" Tokusan thanked him, made his bows, raised the door curtain, and left. Seeing how dark the night was, he turned back and said, "It's pitch black outside." Ryotun lit a lantern and handed it to Tokusan. Just as Tokusan reached for it, Ryotun blew it out. At that, Tokusan came to sudden realization and made a deep bow. Ryotan asks, "What have you realized?" Tokusan replied, "From now on, I will not doubt the words of the old master, who is renowned everywhere under the sun." The following day, Ryotan ascended the rostrum and declared, "There is a man among you whose fangs are like trees of sword and whose mouth is like a bowl of blood. Strike him, and he won't turn his head. Someday, he will settle on top of an isolated peak and establish my way there." Tokusan brought his sutra commentaries and notes to the front hall, held up a torch and said, "Even if you have exhausted abstruse doctrine, it is like placing a hair in vast space. Even if you have learned the vital points of all the truths in the world, it's like a drop of water thrown into a big ravine." He then burned all of his commentaries and notes. After making bows, he left. He did come back, actually, and spent 30 years more in that monastery. So there are several translations of Mumin Khan, and Koan Yamada reminds us that Ryotan was a fifth generation successor of the sixth patriarch. That is, he lives somewhere around the year 850. Tokusan here is the questioner, but later he became the kindly master who was prematurely carrying his bowls to dinner and got corrected by an upstart monk named Seppo, who himself turned out to be a great master. But here, Tokusan's a newly arrived scholar from the north. He's come south to prove wrong those who believe in sudden enlightenment. He was a legend in his own mind, and he went by the nickname of Shu, King of the Diamond Sutra. His goal was to be the expert and get the firmest interpretive drop on this crucial sutra, the Diamond Sutra, which was the first sutra that came to America and influenced Thoreau and Emerson and Margaret Fuller. Anyway, he reminds me of an arrogant professor of Yale who once came to Waterville and before he went in to give a talk, boasted that regarding a poem of Wordsworth that he had the poem by the balls. Which is quite something to say about a poem. And about yourself. Anyway, it said that Tokusan so resented Zen, because he comes from the north, you know, and this was happening in the south. He so resented Zen that he couldn't even talk about it. He'd get so upset. And what he hated most about Zen was the contention that realization can happen suddenly outside the aid of things like the Diamond Sutra. His certainty, however, began to be deconstructed when he stopped at a small wayside tea booth run by a woman. She asked him what's in this box that he's carrying, and he says, well, those are my notes on the Diamond Sutra. I'm sure the Diamond Sutra came. She says, I don't know if he actually said that, but she said she'd like to ask him a question, and if he answered it, he'd get his tea for free. She said, it says in your sutra that the past mind cannot be caught. The present mind can't be caught. The future mind can't be caught. With what mind will you eat this snack? Or tenjin, as it was called. Sakita, another translator, says, at what mind are you going to have refreshed? And Tokusan can't answer. He's silent, not out of resentment, but because he's been stumped. Those of you who have been through the recently published book of Zen stories called The Hidden Lamp, which is about women in the Zen tradition. It's full of stories about women outsmarting men. And it's a fairly strong motif in Zen, where patriarchs occasionally get skewered by female adepts. There's another background story to this koan, and it concerns the etymology of Ryokan's name. Rya means dragon, and tan or kan means abyss. So when Tokusan shows up at Ryotan's zendo, he says, I don't see a dragon. I don't see an abyss. Are you getting to like this guy? Ryotan said, you see Ryotan with your own eyes. So Tokusan, not unlike the rest of us, is caught in a dream of language without recognizing it. So he puts on his smarty pants and he makes a verbal play on dragon and abyss so as to better Ryokan or Ryotan. And Ryotan says, right here, right now. Doesn't engage it at all. Here I am. As Mumon's verse says of this koan, hearing the name cannot surpass seeing the face. Of course, Mumon, who is a devilish person, also says in the next sentence, seeing the face cannot surpass hearing the name. So he completely contradicts himself. We won't attempt to unravel that mystery tonight. Anyway, our koan begins where and when Tokusan has dropped enough pride so as to ask for instruction. Maybe he was just waiting to see if he could skewer Ryotan. But he doesn't get that far, because Ryotan turns off the lamp and leaves him in pitch dark. Why is it so important that this darkness provokes a realization? I recently heard Joan Sutherland talk about darkness, where she reminds us that 96% of the universe is dark matter or dark energy, and only 4% is lit, or even material. And she suggests that that's an analogy for how much the ratio of what we know versus what we don't know. Not just about the universe, but about ourselves. The science of optics tells us that it's only darkness, not light, that can be seen. We can't see light until it bounces off something and refracts. Darkness, however, is visible. Light illuminates the phenomenal world of objects. We use our most rational sense, eyesight, to create perspective, distance, and clarity. And hooray for the miracle of our optic nerve and our eye that picks up its part of the spectrum. But likewise, hooray for Einstein, who says, we suffer from a sort of optical illusion of separation. He's referring to physics in which there are no gaps in an atomic or even in a subatomic way. We know that our disconnection or our felt disconnection from things or our perception of distance is in an absolute sense an illusion. It could also be said that we have eyes so we can look outside ourselves and not look inside. It's said that everything is sudden for the blind. But we can avoid, if we are quite asleep, direct a contact with our own interior nature. In the pitch dark, however, the world of form recedes and we are plunged into an all-at-onceness of creation. Its absence of objects becomes an undifferentiated presence. As Theodore Redke, an American poet, says, apropos of how our senses sharpen in the dark, in a dark time, the eye begins to see. I meet my shadow in the deepening shade. And in the poem, The Waking, he says, I wake to sleep and take my waking slow. I learn by going where I have to go. And then, very close to what Tokusan experiences, what falls away is always and is near. By that, I think he means that everything is always falling away. Change is incessant, ungraspable, present. And it's also, paradoxically, totally near us, intimately here. And when we experience that moment-by-moment change, it begets in us a heart of compassion. Ryotan springs darkness on Tokusan, so Tokusan loses his bearings, his verbal way of dispelling the mystery with interpretation. And in losing bearings, losing his prejudices, he finds intimacy with all things. What falls away is always near. The ego, being what it is, entices us, when we read and penetrate these koans, to identify with the master who somehow jujitsus the foggy thinking out of his questioner and leaves him sprawling, but perhaps enlightened, or at least, in this case, endarkened. So I'm tempted to see Tokusan as a version of myself. Or, more convenient for me, Tokusan is an avatar of my most arrogant colleagues who get poems by the balls. But ultimately, the difference between the famous Yale professor and Tokusan is strong. Tokusan may have thought he was going south to refute those Zen pretenders. But the fact is, not all of us have the courage to face those who we detest. And very few of us actually get to face those people and discover that we're wrong and admit it. Tokusan is taken beyond what he knows by the tea lady. Because he cannot say what mind the tea will refresh. And it isn't long after talking to the tea lady that he's sitting outside of Ryotan's hut all night asking for instruction. He's looking for the light. But his big big lesson is the moist dark. The great wordless depth which surrounds us and grounds us as surely as the ocean surrounds and undergirds a wave. Joan Sutherland, who's a Zen teacher in our tradition, and Ryokan invite us into endarkenment and marry that process to enlightenment or realization. Tokusan lost his shield of knowingness, and he was plunged into the darkness naked in his altogether, and poof, his ego drops away, and he's immersed in the realm of not knowing, where the optical illusion of separation is less insistent. And so he and we can more readily experience ourselves continuous with and interpenetrated by the cosmos. So where does that leave us right here, right now? We've got our light. Where is our saving darkness? Is Tokusan just way beyond us in his vulnerability to what lies beyond his projections? Well, this darkness is all around us and in us, even in the light of day. The nub of it is that the very air is experienceable, but not knowable. Experienceable, but not knowable. Every time we breathe in, breathe out, start counting from 1 to 10, we just don't know where we're going to end up. The one injunction of Korean Zen what's the name of the Kwan? What's the name of the tradition? Anyway, Sung-Song's tradition. Only don't know. When you go into a face-to-face interview with, in that Korean tradition, they fire a koan at you. You don't come in prepared. Fire a koan at you, and the first thing you say is, only don't know, or don't know. And then they say, is that all? The teacher says. So not knowing is Zen essential. In darkness, beyond knowing, the eye begins to see our shadow as continuous with darkness, and we learn to abide with it. I have a nephew, a sailor, who's soon going to embark on a single-handed around-the-world sailboat race, attempting to break the record of 139 days. He's got a lot of confidence and courage, and also an improvident foolhardiness and level of self-indulgence that's stunning. But I do love and admire his chutzpah, even if he is on a dangerous errand. He has young kids. He could just be swept overboard at any moment. But he has this lust for extreme experience, and he has had this dream since he was 20 years old. He's got wanderlust. So I went sailing with him on Friday, and I'm asking him a lot of questions about, indirectly on it, just how he's planning to stay alive. And it's not really a boat, it's a machine. It's a sailing machine. It's so complicated, it's just nauseating. Anyway, he thinks, and at one point he stops and he says, there's all this outside stuff that I have to worry about. What I'm really worried about is going insane. And where is he going to go insane? When he is becalmed. He cannot stand to be becalmed. It drives him, it makes he feels completely impotent. There's nothing that his free will can do in that situation. And he's unable to see that being becalmed is not an interruption in his journey, but part of his journey. He, like many, many of us in America, cannot stand pure being. He can't even hear in the word becalmed, be calm. And how different is that from us? How often are we calm? We prefer what we can measure to what we can't. We respond more easily to sound than to silence. form than to formlessness. If you judge by our actions or by our governor, we prefer suffering to the cessation of suffering. Self to selflessness, the relative to the infinite, denial to surrender, restlessness to absolute contentment, separation to non-separation, doing to non-doing, and then to now. We prefer our projections and our knowingness to things as they are with no meanings. And of course, we prefer light over darkness. If you fly over the East Coast on a clear night, you can see that it's one blanket of artificial light, millions of erasures of darkness. It's a luminous light slick over a primordial dark. All you have to do is blow up four or five of the right transfer stations on that grid, and everything will fall into the sudden silence the Tokusan was plunged. If we go by the precedent that was set by the Great Blackout, was that what it was called in New York City? The Great Blackout? Soon, unprecedented numbers of people will begin making love. There was a great spike in births after the Great Blackout in New York City. Now, that making love might not be enlightenment, but it is a sign in our truest nature we prefer intimacy to fear. So, we're just starting out here in a way on our session. Why don't we try acting as if the lights are out? Let's become intimate with the moment that we share. Let's attend lovingly to the moment. That way no one will get pregnant, and we may actually become what we already are, unborn. So court that not knowing. One day Tokusan kept asking, I'm not going to speak about the second half of this koan, maybe for another time. For me, I just wanted to focus on this issue of darkness and not knowing. One day, Tokusan kept asking Ryutan for instructions till nightfall. Ryutan finally said, the night is late. Why don't you go to bed? Tokusan thanked him, made his bows, raised the door curtain, and left. Seeing how dark the night was, he turned back and said, it's pitch black outside. Ryutan lit a lantern and handed it to Tokusan. Just as Tokusan reached for it, Ryutan blew it out. At that, Tokusan came to sudden realization and made a deep bow. Ryutan asked, what have you realized? Tokusan replied, from now on, I will not doubt the words of the old master, who is renowned everywhere under the sun. The following day, Ryutan ascended the rostrum and declared, there's a man among you whose fangs are like trees of swords and whose mouth is like a bowl of blood. Strike him and he won't turn his head. Someday, he will settle on top of an isolated peak and establish my way there.
Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. Creations are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Reality is boundless. I vow to perceive it. The enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it.